All right, real quick, people, before we get into today's show, we've just released a new course, Periodization for Periods, all around how to train women around their monthly cycle, and we've got it on special. If you're interested, click the link in the show notes.
You are now listening to the Fitness Education Online Podcast, the podcast where fitness professionals go to grow their fitness business. If you're in the fitness industry, you'll find tips and strategies from proven business experts. Now, let's start the show.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Fitness Education Online Podcast. I am super excited because we've got an absolute rock star on the line this week. And I know I say that about every guest every week, but this person actually is. If you take a look at his resume, he's a former professional rugby league player. He played in the English Super League for over 10 years. He's an experienced strength and conditioning coach. He spent about 5-6 years at the Canberra Raiders. He spent the last year or so at the ACT Brumbies. He's a level 3 strength and conditioning coach with ASCA. He's an ESSA, sports and exercise scientist, and he's probably one of the most, if not the most, biggest expert in the world to speak about this topic here. It's the one and only Mr. Ryan Clayton. Ryan, how are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Thank you for having me on. Much appreciated, and can't wait to show some insights into the professional world.
Yes, can't wait to hear what you've got to say. Just before we dive into that, have you been following the Rugby League World Cup at all?
Yeah, I've watched England beat Samoa. Yeah. Really happy with the result. I didn't actually see it coming, but yeah, real good result from the English gods. And there's some former players in there that I had some things to do with: George Williams, Elliot Whitehead. Well, John Bateman didn't play, but he's in the squad. So yeah, really excited to see how far they can go on home turf, and yeah, wishing them all the best.
Yeah, yeah. For the listeners that maybe aren't that familiar with rugby league, we've got a World Cup. It's not quite the Soccer World Cup, but there are a couple good teams in there. And Samoa picked a really, really strong team, you know, just filled with like NRL stars and Penrith Panthers and grand finalists. And they played England on the first game. And it was kind of, I mean, I didn't even know who was favourites beforehand. It must have been a pretty, pretty close kind of thing. And then England beat them like 60-0 or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think, well, Samoa were favourites with the bookies, but heavy favourites.
Yeah,
60-6. It was quite close for the first 20 minutes. And then England kind of took control of the game and got a really good win, good start.
Wait, let's. I've obviously done a bit of research on yourself, Ryan. For my listeners that haven't, do you want to let everyone know a little bit? Maybe start with exactly what it is you do now and what your role is now, and then if we can dive in, kind of like how that happened, how you went from kind of English Super League player to where you are now.
Yeah, so my official role at the Brumbies is head of athletic performance. Previously, I was head of strength and power. My boss last year left, and I got promoted this year, which is a really exciting challenge for myself. We were quite successful last year, so building on that, hopefully we can have a similar kind of year or go one better and get to a grand final and win it. Regarding my journey, so
let's spend a minute there just for the listeners as well, and also just for those of you that maybe aren't rugby fans, the Brumbies are in the Super Rugby competition, which is the premier competition in Australia. And is New Zealand in there? I don't even know.
New Zealand teams as well. So New Zealand and Australian teams, Super 14. So
and there's only a handful of Australian teams, right? How many?
I think there's five franchises. There's ACT Brumbies, Queensland Reds, Western Force, New South Wales, Waratahs, and Melbourne Rebels are the five Australian franchises.
Yeah.
So really lucky to be involved in one of them.
And I just want to kind of position Ryan there. So there's only five teams like this in Australia. And he's running one. He's essentially running the athletic program for one of them there, which just shows where he is in the space there. So, sorry, I just wanted to highlight that.
That's okay. Yeah. And then regarding my journey, I finished playing in 2010, and there was an opportunity for me to start my strength and conditioning career at Sale Sharks.
Is that that's who you were? That's who you were playing with at the time, or?
No. So I was playing rugby league, and Sale Sharks are a rugby union team
Oh,
in the
okay.
UK,
Yeah.
through a mutual friend. Just networking while I was playing was quite important, to get that opportunity. So that was a it wasn't a paid position at the start. I was actually still playing part-time rugby league to earn a wage and pay my mortgage, and I did that for a year and successfully earned a contract at the end of that to be an assistant strength and conditioning coach under a guy called Nigel Ashley-Jones, who's currently at Scarlets. He had a vast amount of knowledge and experience, and I learned a hell of a lot of him in the 2 years we were together. From there, he left to go to the Raiders, and I left to go to Yorkshire Carnegie to head. That was my first position as a head of strength and conditioning. That was a great experience.
That's
To head.
rugby union,
That
rugby
was
union.
still rugby union
Yep.
in north of England. And then I kept in contact with Nigel, my first boss from Sale Sharks, and he was kind of saying there might be a position come up at the Raiders. Would I be interested? So as a former league player, I was really interested to go to the NRL. It was kind of a dream to kind of want to test myself in the best competition in rugby league. So when he did actually say there's an opportunity, myself and my family jumped at the kind of opportunity. We
Yeah,
flew
wow.
out in 2015 and spent six years at the Raiders. We got to a grand final in 2019. We got to two prelim semis in 2016 and 2020. So the 6 years we were there, the 3 years were pretty successful. The 3 years we weren't, that was probably the biggest learning curves in defeat, or failure was probably the kind of biggest learning curve that I had, rather than what worked. It was probably more than what didn't work, and to correct that. So, and then we both left in 2021. Nigel went to Scarlets and I went to ACT Brumbies as head of strength and power. That was last year. We got to a semi-final and got beat off the Crusaders or the Blues, and then the Crusaders beat the Blues in the final. Yes,
Bloody
we were one game
Kiwis,
short.
bloody Kiwis, right?
Yeah, I know they're pretty good at rugby union.
Yeah,
They're pretty good at
that's
rugby league as well. So
the
it's their first sport.
yeah.
We were pretty confident going into that because we'd had some quite close games. We had some players missing, but yeah, we fell short by a couple of points in the semis, so we didn't get to make the grand final. But it was still a relatively successful year.
You
And
would have
then
been the best
obviously,
Australian franchise, right?
we were the top of the Australian franchises.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were the only Australian franchise in the semi-final. So
Yeah.
you could say it was a successful year, but you kind of always want to be the best,
Yeah.
getting to grand finals and winning, because that's what professional sport is kind of all about, really.
Yep.
Yeah,
Yep.
so here we are today, head of athletic performance.
Awesome. Wait, I got a couple questions with that kind of journey, Ryan. The first one is, did you always knew when you were playing, did you always know that you were going to get into strength and conditioning coaching afterwards, or did that come up during the journey? Tell us about that.
I always had an interest in sport from a real young age. I never really knew what I wanted to do with that. I was actually looking to be a PE teacher
Yeah.
when I was playing, and I kind of rumbled around with that for a couple of years. And I thought, should I do my postgrad in teaching? My next kind of train of thought was physiotherapy.
Yeah.
And then when I was actually in professional sport, I realized, that they're kind of the people that get complained to the most, and they've got to be before and after training. There wasn't actually too much coaching to it. So I really enjoyed coaching. So I kind of got pushed down the strength and conditioning kind of route, because I knew so many people, and I networked within that industry. It was kind of something that kind of fell at my feet, and I kind of felt like I was a I had something to offer in that kind of range. So then when people were kind of giving me good feedback, I was like, oh, well, this is probably the way to go after my career. So that was probably the career path of kind of decision making that I probably had over the 10 years I was playing.
Gotcha. And I know you're very qualified now at what you do in terms of like, qualifications and courses and that kind of stuff there. When you first started, what did you kind of have under your belt there? Or was it more just like the experience?
I think being a professional player kind of helped me in that space. What I see is a lot of people coming out of university that can quote papers, books, but haven't got any kind of people skills that can kind of coach people and kind of push people into their kind of thinking of what they want to do and enjoyment of certain drills and exercises, where I think that helped me a little bit being a professional player, where I'd seen kind of sort of stuff, I'd been in sessions. So that kind of helped me. But yeah, I wouldn't say I was the best coach in the first 2 or 3 years of coaching. It's a journey, and I think a lot of people learn off different people, and that's kind of my journey, where I've been quite lucky in the fact that I've worked under some very good experienced S&C coaches and high performance managers. I kind of learned my way along the way, and I think university is a really good tool, but it kind of doesn't really prepare you for strength and conditioning and working with athletes on a day-to-day basis, kind of man management kind of skills that are probably needed at this level.
Well, that leads on to my next question there. It's going to be a lot of people listening to this, watching this, who are currently personal trainers and may have an interest in training athletes. What kind of pathway would you recommend? Is ASCA the first step? Do you look at doing a degree? Do you look at just getting involved in your local sports teams? And on top of that as well, how important is it to have that skill set in that sport there? Like, have you, yeah, tell us about both of those kind of things there.
Well, first of all, I would definitely, you've got to do a degree of some sort, whether that's sports science or biomechanics or something along that way. To get ASCA qualified, you have to have a degree. So that's kind of a logical progression. What I would say is get involved with your local team, volunteer at your local sporting teams and your local professional teams, because all this kind of experience and exposure to different ways of doing things, different ways to talk to athletes, different ways to kind of get your point across in a direct and kind of poignant manner. So these kind of things are really important in coaching, because normally you're under some kind of time constraints, whether it's schedule or head coach or something like that. So it's not normally an endless kind of time scale. So trying to get your point across quickly and effectively is probably a real point of difference within coaching. So I would say probably degree, ASCA, and then try and get some experience of coaching athletes, kids, kind of anything around that kind of area, and then probably volunteer at your local clubs, sporting clubs, get an internship. You can do internships. We've got a couple of people through the University of Canberra at the minute that we kind of take on yearly. So kind of apply for these kind of positions, and that'll give you a foot in the door. And then it's networking after that. So I think one thing that I'm really need to get better at is networking. I think I've got a very close network, but I think getting a wider network, because professional sport is sometimes a cruel industry. One or two people change positions, and then you end up moving on, not because you're doing a poor job, not because no one likes you. It's just because someone else wants to bring
The coach
his
brings them.
friend in, or the coach he's worked with before. So it's not always the job that you do that keeps you employed. It's your next job that you can go to create a decent network, I think is really important.
Now, in terms of like the skill set, and if you can answer this both, I guess, as a player and as a coach, when you were a player, were all the strength and conditioning coaches former league players, former rugby players, or even now? Is the your team here all ex-rugby players, and were they professional, amateur? What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think being a professional, a former player, sometimes can be negative.
Really?
And a positive. I found that some people have reservations about employing former professional athletes because they're still in the player kind of mode, and they've not moved on from that, and they're probably less scientific. That's kind of a broad oversight. The positive, obviously, is you've been in the position that you're trying to coach people. You know the environment. You know how to talk to players. You know how to get the best out of players. You know what drills work and don't work. So you've got a real good idea. So my kind of spectrum of coaches that I've worked under as a player, they weren't all professional rugby league players or former players or former athletes. It was kind of a mix. And I think that was really important for me to get a broad understanding of different people. So there was kind of a former AFL player, a former rugby league player. And there was actually a guy that had a swimming background. But there were people probably always interested in sport, whether they were a specialist in a certain sport and play professionally. Not everyone. I don't think it's 100% important or necessary that you're a former player. In some aspects, like I said before, in some aspects I think it does help, in some aspects I think it's actually a hindrance as well.
Yeah, and I guess it comes down to the team as well. If you're looking at a team of coaches, you may want a couple of each, you know? You may want at least one person that's played at that elite level, but then you might be like, hey, we don't want all players there. Let's get someone from a different sport. Let's get someone who maybe hasn't played an elite level but is very scientific, and then they can bounce around there. So I see.
Yeah, 100%. When you're putting a team together, it's basically putting people together that kind of can gel and work together on a similar pattern on how they want to put things together. And so that makes everyone streamlined in one kind of flow. So there's no kind of conflict in the way that people want to run it or the program that you wanted to deliver.
No better way to lose teams than to do that, right? One coach tells you this, the other coach tells you that.
Yeah, exactly. So that quickly, what professional players are quite good at is kind of finding weaknesses in teams and in coaches. So if you're not aligned, they kind of quickly find that out. So being aligned is a quite a big one when you're trying to employ people. And then different skill sets, you're 100% right. Mm. Someone who's got a real coach, athlete-centered kind of philosophy versus someone who's really numbers orientated, really sport science wise, they could sometimes can work really well together. Sometimes they can conflict. So there's the art of sport science, and then you know there's the actual sport science and the numbers. So where kind of the best coaches that I think are probably a mixture of both.
Yeah,
because I think the numbers are really important, but the numbers shouldn't dictate training. Training is something, and philosophy is something that, you know, is not in team sport. It's very hard to be kind of set in stone because there's so many different people that kind of have an influence over training. Your head coach, your assistant coaches, your scrum coaches, you know, all these people, your strength and power coach, they all have a say in the program. So getting everyone aligned, getting everyone to stick to timing, stick to loads, is that's kind of the trick or the art of it. And the science, if you're really rigid, sometimes that doesn't really work too well with head coaches who want to do a little bit more. So there's going to be some wriggle room around your program and your scheduling and stuff like that. So, yeah, getting everyone to work together is probably the biggest part of it.
Yeah. Now, tell us a little bit more about your specific role there, Ryan. So you mentioned head of athletic development, and this doesn't even have to be like specific to the Brumbies. If you can just kind of paint a bit of a picture of like what a strength and conditioning coach would do at a professional rugby club or rugby league club and the different kind of roles there.
So different kind of roles. A head of athletic performance is kind of over the whole squad.
Gotcha.
So we're looking at global loads, distance, high-speed meters, how fast they run, injury prevention models, the schedule, the kind of global plan, where we play, how we get there, travel, logistics, how hard training is going to be, what kind of metrics, whether it's acceleration based or high speed meter based training, kind of the plan of pre-season. They're kind of over the whole kind of schedule, and then you've probably got a strength and power coach who kind of just he's probably an assistant who works solely in the gym, but kind of
Gotcha.
assists on the field with kind of things that might need doing. Someone might need extra conditioning or an extra speed work or something like that. So that kind of would be his role. And a lot of teams are different, so everyone kind of sets this up differently. As we spoke before, getting a team that works well together. Every club does it slightly different. This is just probably a general one. And then there's probably a sports scientist who's GPS, looking at all the numbers, making sure that the individual loads aren't too low or too high on individual players, who's then feeds that back to the head of athletic performance, who makes a decision on do you top that athlete up or do you rest him? And then there's working together with two, maybe one, two, or three physios, depending on your club financially, or some clubs have like Rugby Australia paid employees.
Gotcha. Now, what about if you're watching a game, there's kind of the sports trainers that are running on and off the field and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Where would that be the strength and power coach, or who? Where do they fit into? Are they completely different again?
Yeah, it's different at every club. I
Okay.
actually ran the blue shirt at the Raiders for a while, and I ran the
Okay.
yellow shirt at the Raiders. Blue shirt was kind of running on, giving messages, which was tactical or technical
Yep. Oh,
messages
wow. So
and
that's
warning.
part of, and that's part of still the strength and conditioning side of things as well.
Sometimes it depends.
Okay.
Sometimes an assistant coach, a rugby coach, does that role.
Yep.
It was just the fact that I was an ex-player and I
Yeah.
could run, so a lot of assistant coaches can't haven't got any knees left, so they don't run so much, or they're too old to run. And then the yellow shirt was an assistant role to a physio who kind of run the orange shirt, which is more medical.
Gotcha.
Again, in rugby union, it's different. The doctors and the physios run all the sidelines, and then the coaches run the blue shirt or the equivalent to that. So we kind of on the sideline doing warm-ups, sub warm-ups, looking at GPS, live GPS numbers, that kind of stuff on the sideline.
Gotcha. Awesome. All right. Well, hey, super interesting, Ryan. What I'd like to speak about now is for the trainers that, and I know you do a bit of this yourself as well. There's a lot of like not professional rugby players, but weekend warriors, that kind of stuff there that, want to get stronger, faster, fitter for rugby. They'll walk into a gym, they'll hire a personal trainer and essentially say, "Hey, I'm a rugby player. I want to get stronger, faster, fitter. Can you help me?" What
Yep.
kind of tips would you have for a personal trainer that's training someone like that?
Let's take a quick break.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, well, actually, on the side, I actually run an online program where people can kind of buy a program or get advice. So I offer 4, 8, and 12 week programs. ClaytonPerformanceTraining.com is my website, and what I see there is I see a
We'll
lot of
put the link
people.
just for the listeners. We'll put that link in the show notes as well if you want to check
Oh
it
yeah,
out. Yep.
brilliant. Yeah, thank you. So the kind of what I see there is a lot of people who play sport the weekend. They've either got a long injury history, or they want to get a little bit better, like you said, stronger, fitter, faster, to improve their sporting performance. So their advice, 9 times out of 10, is technical advice on how to lift, I think, is the biggest kind of deficit that I see. And the other one is how to put a week together. When to run fast, when not to run. I see a lot of people just either overtraining or undertraining and not putting the week together correctly to avoid injury and maximize performance. That's kind of what I see the most of, and I kind of the most advice I give in like in that kind of area. So a personal trainer, what advice I would give to that person who comes in is taking the full picture of what that person's trying to achieve. So don't just think about that training session, getting people better in that training session. Think about what came before that. When was their last match? When did they last train? What was the content? When's their next game? I think a lot of people get muddled up with just kind of focusing on trying to get their squat better in or their fitness better in that one session, where really the best kind of way to do that is over a period of time to gradually increase people's exposure to high-speed running, volume and distance, and getting stronger over a period of time rather than just getting strong in that one session. I think that's one of the biggest biggest mistakes I've seen is everyone's trying to lift maximally, run maximally all the time, where that's how people get injured. And you know, to avoid that, to load that correctly, I think it's one of the biggest like learning curves that I've had in online strength and conditioning.
Gotcha. Okay. What about resources? So let's say a personal trainer is listening to this and they're like, okay, I got to get better at my programming. Have you got any resources that you could recommend, whether it's books, whether it's podcasts, whether it's courses, people to follow? Who's the best programming gurus out there at the moment?
There's many. There's a lot out there. MAS-wise, I'll probably follow Martin Boucher. So Max Aerobic Speed Training, I follow him. He's a French guy, very well-read, has got lots of things online. And then speed-wise, Vern Gambetta, there's obviously, he's out there quite a lot. And then I think his name's Derek Hansen, speed-wise. Jonas Dodu, speed-wise, which is an English guy. And then weights wise, there's obviously a lot Westfield Barbell, all these kind of guys out there. I actually like a guy, Mike Boyle.
Oh, yeah. Big in the fitness industry.
Yeah, so I kind of followed him quite a lot as a junior coach. Technically, you know, I think he's got some really good points, gets his point across well. You know, he's got a system, he does a lot of single leg work. Unilateral rather than bilateral. Do you know, it prepares people for the combined test in a lot of the college kind of things. So, yeah, I followed him quite a lot in the gym. And then I think a lot of things is, you know, researching. So there's a lot of research out there at the minute. So researching what kind of your philosophy is and picking little bits out of everyone and not just following one guy, because I think one guy, it can be real. It can be prescribed one way into real right side kind of thinking or left side thinking. I think there's a middle ground somewhere. Let's take hamstring prevention. Is it eccentric that's the most important? Is it an isometric contraction that's most important? Is it pelvic positioning or is it high speed running that kind of is the golden bullet, run fast and often? So I'd be real careful around people that just say it's just this. That only gets people fit and resilient. I'd be real careful about them people. And I think there's a middle ground in most things. And then just trial and error and work out what works for you, what doesn't work, what works out for your clients. I suppose it's probably a little bit different to professional sport, as in these professional athletes, they're there every day. It's their job. They get paid to do it. They have to turn up. Where in a personal training business, you kind of client, you have to kind of get them coming back regularly, and client retention is probably a real big thing.
Yeah.
So making it interesting as well is probably one thing, and building people's kind of belief in what you're trying to do, and then always tweaking a little bits of your program to make it interesting and new to people. So, I'm guessing, but yeah, I think that might be quite important. It's still important in rugby league, rugby union, for soccer, because players are involved.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Like, because in the fitness personal training kind of world, it's so important to keep it like interesting and fun, because otherwise the person will just cancel, right? Yeah. So you almost sacrifice a little bit of the gains or the scientific benefit just to keep that person coming. Yeah. So I want to ask you that question in the professional space, because you mentioned that's these guys' full-time job. Like, they're not paying the personal trainer to go. Like, they're getting paid to go. I'm guessing they're obviously more motivated than the average sort of person, but still they do still get bored, and you need to keep it interesting, and it's not just as much of this is what we need to do to win. What's your take there?
Yeah, it's a very interesting space. Like some of my ex-professional kind of coaches, they say do 3 years at a club and move because people get bored of you.
Yeah, wow.
So your philosophy, your kind of the way you like to do things, it's, and I know people that stayed at 10 years at clubs, so it's not every club. So kind of reinventing yourself, not all the time, but making small tweaks to your program. My kind of, in the weights room, just for instance, my non-negotiables are squat, chin, bench, RDL, you know, these kind of staples in the program, and everything else is kind of up for negotiation. So the one way that I try and make it personalized to that individual athlete is, if you're, let's say squat for instance, if you have a pathology that you don't like back squatting, or you just don't like back squatting, I'd rather program a front squat or a trap bar deadlift for that particular person, or a single leg a step up, or a Bulgarian squat. I would rather program that so they lift within 10 and they've got more buy into that exercise than just say this exercise solves everything. So that's my way of trying to get players to kind of buy in, is individualizing that part of the program to make them buy in more, to make them enjoy their programming more. Because I think what I've found with athletes is, if they enjoy doing it, you have a laugh while they're doing it. Yeah. It's scientifically backed up. You know, there's certain non-negotiables that you can't get away from.
Yeah.
And you have to be strong. You have to be powerful. So if he wants to do, something real fluffy instead of his squat pattern, then, I'm gonna ask him questions. I'm gonna try and talk him out of that. So, yeah, it's still a very interesting topic within professional sports. How you get the best out of athletes, how you keep it interesting, it's still the same. I would think it's knowing your athletes. So some players can do the same session week in, week out, and not get too bored. You manipulate rep range and load schemes, and they're real happy. Some others, take a little bit more of a buy-in, and you have to keep it real interesting for them and different. And I think that's just knowing your group and knowing your athletes.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. All right. Well, Ryan, that's pretty much all I wanted to talk about for today. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people listening to this being like, all right, this guy is cool. He knows his stuff. I want to follow him. If we want to follow you, where do we go? What's your best socials?
So probably Instagram, Clayton Performance Training. That's probably the best place to get me. Do you know, if you send me a message in there, I'm more than happy to get back to anyone. I regularly do it. It's already up and running. The program, the online program, so it's up and running. If you want to get any advice, or as a personal trainer, or you want a program, or you want to, so that's one of the best things I found, is to go out there and actually train, do different programs, and then find out what works, what doesn't work. That's probably one of the advice I'd give.
100%. Awesome. All right. Well, Ryan, is there anything I should have asked you but didn't, or anything you want to finish us off with?
I think one of the biggest things I've always trying to keep it simple and effective in your programming, and clear and goal orientated. So whether he wants to lose 5 kg body weight, whether he wants to increase his muscle mass, where he wants to increase his bench press to 150, if people are more motivated to do it, then they're more likely to do the program, and you'll get better results on the back of it. And that's probably my biggest piece of advice.
Love it. Awesome. All right, Ryan, thank you very much for your time.
No worries, mate. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you liked this show, share it with your friends, subscribe on iTunes, and leave us a 5-star review. For show notes and free training on how to grow your fitness business, visit www.fitnesseducationonline.com.au.
Are you a fitness professional looking to provide your clients with personalized meal plans? Well, check out Mealsy, the ultimate solution for creating custom meal plans in just a few simple clicks. With Mealsy, you can say goodbye to countless hours spent on meal planning. Our Australian meal planning web app is designed to save you time and effort, so you can focus on what really matters, your clients and their success. Mealsy provides you with a vast library of recipes, all created by nutrition professionals, from breakfast to dinner and everything in between. We've got you covered. Whether you want to create a custom meal plan tailored to your client's needs or choose from our selection of ready-made meal plans, Mealsy has the flexibility to accommodate your preferences. So why waste precious time and energy creating meal plans from scratch? Let Mealsy do the heavy lifting for you, while you focus on delivering exceptional fitness services. Join the community of fitness professionals who have revolutionized their business with Mealsy. Visit our website at www.mealsy.com and sign up today. Mealsy, the smarter way to meal plan for fitness professionals.